Hillman on CliffCentral.com.
Right then, it's the informed appetite, the very, very swaggy, cool, dope, all of those things. Natalie Matters in the building. She's never been introduced like that before, but today's a good day to start.
I feel like a rock star.
Yes, you are. You're a rock star of the eating world and the drinking world as well. Today we're talking all about the drinking world, not just alcoholic drinks. It's funny, the word drink is so associated with being alcoholic or alcoholism.
People.
Yeah. But we're referring to tea and coffee and juice and smoothies and all of that. First of all, and no one's ever really been able to explain this to me, they say a lean adult is 60 to 70% water by weight, an obese person 45 to 55% water. I've never seen that in myself. I can cry if I want to, but it doesn't feel like 60% of me is going to come out.
So what this is actually about is that the human body is made up of cells. And a cell, yes, it has an outside and our skin looks pretty solid. But the truth is our cells are actually these teeny tiny little bags of chemical reactions that are happening. And the ones that we can see and touch on the outside, like our skin, they're a bit more dehydrated. But inside you, there's a lot of water and fluid that is busy moving around. So every single cell operates because it is watery and it is able to have these chemical reactions within a water environment. So on the outside, we've got things like proteins and fats that are our skin, and like our hair is made up of keratin, which is something that our body makes. But inside, you're actually quite wet.
You said it.
Sorry.
Okay. Now, when it comes to like drinking stuff, it seems like water's just got this reputation as the be-all and the end-all and really the only thing you should ever consider. And why we even started things like juices, we're not entirely sure. I mean, when we look at water, you know, just that stuff that comes out of the tap or that we, you know, get in the bottle or whatever. I mean, what is it about water that just makes it the best option before you even look at anything else?
Well, it's the best option in certain circumstances. If we're busy exercising, say the people who are busy doing the Tour de France, they will not hydrate very well if they are using just water.
Okay.
And when we add sugar to that, it actually improves how well we absorb.
This is fantastic news, yeah?
Fantastic news for some. So, for example, if you get oral rehydration solution like Rehydrates, which some people drink when they're hungover, the reason it works so well to rehydrate you is because it has some salts inside it and it has sugar. And where sugar goes, water goes. And so we actually absorb it better when there is a little bit of sugar. But this doesn't mean that all of us need sugar in order to stay hydrated. You can actually just drink water. And in your normal everyday life, you will absorb that water and use the amount that you need. Mm. And the water that you don't need, you will secrete via your kidneys. We cannot store water in our bodies the way we can store, for example, fat. Mm. So we need to drink enough water every single day to keep all of those cells well hydrated so that everything can actually work as normal. I mean, already if you start experiencing 1 to 2% dehydration, you're going to feel thirsty. You might start not feeling so great. And as you get more and more dehydrated, if you don't respond to that thirst, you will start to experience more and more issues.
Your body will always tell you when you're thirsty though, right?
Yes, some people become a little bit deaf to it almost, like your body says, hey, please give me water, I'm thirsty, and some people might misinterpret that as, oh, I'm hungry, and the reason for that is, absolutely, the reason for that is certain foods contain a lot of water, so iceberg lettuce, for example, is about 96 or 97% water by weight, that's a lot of water inside a leaf, something like bread even has just under 40% water in it. You don't think of bread as a source of water, but it does have some in.
So you're going to get it then. Your body's going to tell you, but you might just be confused and think it's in the food, but that's okay. But then obviously you might become obese because then you're substituting water for food. Okay.
Exactly. So your body's going, hey, 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 we want water. And you're thinking, oh, I need like another 4 pieces of fruit. No, you actually just need some water. So it is really important that we learn to differentiate between what is real hunger and what is thirst. And that's why a lot of diets will say, oh, you must drink water before your meals. And the idea behind that is you can actually differentiate then, was I really just thirsty?
I want to speak about the culture, though, associated with what it is that we decide to drink. I mean, for me, and I don't know why this is, I think it's because, like, as a kid, I had Happy Meals and all of that kind of thing. But I've always associated eating out, any form of eating out, up until recently, with anything but water as the drink that you drink. Like, if I'm at a restaurant, I'm not going to have water. If I'm at home, yes, maybe I'll have water. But, like, you know, if I'm going to order takeaways or whatever and there's a drink included in the thing, I'm going to make sure it's a juice. I'm going to make sure it's a fizzy drink or whatever. There's just this this complete mental thing that's happened where water is, I don't know, probably not given the kudos that it deserves.
Well, I can open the tap and find water, so there's nothing special about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head.
And so why am I going to ask somebody at the restaurant? And often we associate restaurants with celebrations or, like, there's something great happening and that's why we're at a restaurant. And the truth is, if we just get used to drinking water, it will be completely standard. So if you get into the habit of as soon as you sit down, I mean, in other countries in the world, when you sit down, you get given a glass of water.
That's what I love about the States. Before anything, they've already given you like 6 liters of water.
Yeah, and like as you try to drink the glass, they're like topping it up.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
So in South Africa, we maybe don't have that culture of just ordering a glass of water. But really, I think that might also be a learnt thing, that there are other families where maybe they do all say, oh, everyone gets water because nobody drinks juice, for example. So it's something that I think we learn and we can change.
Absolutely. I think it's very important. But it is okay every now and then to drink something other than water. I want to kick it off with the coffee addicts, the people addicted to caffeine. I mean, there's this stuff on the internet that says caffeine is dehydrating, is all of these things. When it comes to caffeine in drinks, I'm talking about my Red Bulls, my coffees, my all of that. How do we draw the line?
So the American government, the FDA, suggests no more than 400 milligrams of caffeine a day, and the Europeans are a little stricter. They say no more than 300 milligrams of caffeine, and what that means is that more than that might affect your heartbeat or your sleep or something like that. Now, what do we even get that from? On average, because tea contains different amounts to coffee, instant coffee contains different amounts to like filter coffee, generally a safe rule is no more than 4 a day. And that's tea or coffee or...
That's very doable, though. I mean, come on, if you're going with more than 4 cups of coffee...
I know people who have much more than that.
Really?
Yeah, when you start seeing these execs who work ridiculous long hours and they attend nothing but meetings all day, they sit and drink coffee all day. And they don't want a normal coffee, no. They want, like, 4 espressos in a mug. I hope I'm not giving people ideas here. But there are people that drink a lot more than that, and they develop a tolerance to it.
Mm.
And now, when I drink a cup of coffee, people will say caffeine is dehydrating. That doesn't mean that I drink a cup of coffee and then I'm going to go to the toilet and get rid of, into the loo, a cup of coffee and some change. What actually happens is that you don't absorb the full amount of coffee, because the action of the caffeine is that you will lose a little bit of water. So if I take just, if I swallow a caffeine tablet and swallow it without any water, that will be dehydrating. But if I'm having a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, I will absorb some water, just not the entire cup.
It's a bit counterproductive, though, to what you want to do.
Remember, a little bit of coffee isn't the end of the world. And they've done some studies that suggest that you can be protected against Alzheimer's, against Parkinson's, even type 2 diabetes.
Wow.
So you shouldn't say, oh, it's the devil. I say this as a person that likes coffee. So a small amount is fine, but more than 4 a day is a problem.
Okay, so 4 espressos might be a little bit much, but probably not as much as 4 tequilas, which would be the same amount of milliliters.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to alcohol, I mean, there's water in alcohol. How bad can alcohol really be? Come on, that vodka is like, it's clearer than any water I've ever seen in my life before.
It's also got potatoes in it. So.
Oh, shit. Okay, so on alcohol, we've discussed alcohol before. Mm. But where are we at when it comes to alcohol and how it can, outside of just, you know, making you kiss the wrong person, you know, really affect your health?
I'm sure you've heard of the Mediterraneans and how they have this moderate alcohol consumption. And the idea of moderate alcohol consumption is that it can protect against heart disease, for example.
This is wine.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not tequila that protects against heart disease.
I don't know, but I haven't looked at tequila.
I don't want to know if it is going to make it worse for me, yeah?
But they say there that one standard drink, and it's a small drink, it's like 150 ml of wine, one standard drink a day is fine for women, and two standard drinks a day for men are protective against heart disease. But they're not finding a protective effect for other diseases, like, for example, cancer. Hmm. And especially in women, breast cancer and alcohol, every drink that you drink increases your risk of breast cancer. Wow. Now, I don't want to be scaremongering, like, oh, that one tequila shot and now you got cancer. It's accumulative. Mm. We don't get cancer today. It takes a long time to grow, and that's why young people often don't have cancer. But if they do have it, it's because it's growing very quickly. So cancer is one of those things we tend to see in older people. And so with certain diseases, you don't want to have a lot of alcohol. But there again, it's also about genetic differences. Apart from that, we don't really want to binge. So if you know that in a week I can have seven drinks as a woman, I don't want to have them on Saturday afternoon all in one sitting, because that is not moderate alcohol intake.
Mm. Yeah, alcohol's a bit of a tricky one there. Juices? I remember as a kid, all my teeth fell out and no one could figure out why. And then we realized because I was drinking Ceres juice.
Well, yeah.
And that was the reason. And no one would have thought fruit juice. I mean, now we know a lot more, but like back then, 26 years ago, juice seemed like healthy, like apple. The word apple
absolutely.
Was just,
I mean,
it's so bad for you.
It's 100% fruit juice. So people are like, it's just fruit. This is so good for me. Yeah, it has as much sugar in it as a can of Coke. You're literally the same amount of sugar inside fruit juice as inside fizzy drinks. And from that perspective, it's a really easy way to get a massive amount of sugar. And so we think we're doing really well, but you're easily gobbling down two or three full apples in your one glass, and it takes much longer to actually sit and chew through those apples, and you won't get the same damage on your teeth. So absolutely, in terms of what we get with juice, if we're doing fruit juices, it's a problem. I think if somebody can't eat, then maybe they want to look at using vegetable juices, for example, instead of chewing through half a kilogram of broccoli, which no one should really do, but you know, you can get more,
it's better liquidized.
Maybe as a soup, yeah. Let's not juice everything.
Okay. All right. Not always better liquidized. It just seems a lot easier. I know people that have lost truckloads of weight by juicing.
What happens when they stop?
I don't know.
Did juicing teach them how to eat healthy?
No, just it taught them how to drink. And also, you've got to eat solids. I mean, solids are important.
It's part of the signal. When we chew, that sends a signal to my body, ooh, expect food. So part of the phases of digestion, one of them is called the cephalic phase. And cephalic, it refers specifically to your brain, your head.
Mm.
And that is where eating starts. And as you're chewing, it starts signaling things like, we're eating, get ready for food. You can produce insulin, for example. But also that you start secreting enzymes to digest stuff. And if you're not chewing, when do you know that you've had enough? Because your body's like, we haven't chewed at all. Are you getting enough nutrients?
Sure.
You rely then almost entirely on the feeling of stomach distension, where your stomach gets bigger and says, oh, we've got enough, you can stop eating now. So I do think that people who just drink, it doesn't teach them, even though they might be drinking veggie juices and things like that, it doesn't teach them how to eat. And if you're drinking it, are you getting enough protein, unless they're specifically adding protein to their juices?
Okay, we're just about out of time. I hope that we'd run out of time before we hit this, but unfortunately, let me just hide my Sprite away quickly, which probably shouldn't even be in the studio in the first place. But fizzy drinks.
Mm-hmm. So as I said, juice and fizzy drinks, in terms of sugar, are often on par. So they're both sugar bombs, not the juice on its own.
But is there, I mean, you were saying Tour de France earlier, and that, like, you know, a fizzy drink might be good for you.
I didn't say fizzy drink.
Is a fizzy drink ever going to be good for you in any scenario? I mean, Coke was a headache medicine before it was.
I think if you're trying to get rid of your abs.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Then they're the answer. So at the moment, there's a lot of focus on sugary sweetened beverages, is what they call them in medical journals. And they're talking about taxing them. There are countries in the world where they are taxed. And the reason is that if they look at one thing, especially in young people, sugar sweetened beverages or fizzy drinks are what are making the big difference. This is how people are getting fat. And it's increasing risk of diabetes, which we don't see in young people, but we do see it later on. And so if you have to kind of go, what is the sugary drink doing to me? It's increasing your waist circumference. Hmm. And the bigger your waist circumference gets, yes, the further your abs go, but also the greater your likelihood of being sick as an adult.
So it's just making you gain weight. That's really all fizzy drinks are doing.
They maybe make you happy one. For a moment, but I reckon that's about it.
Is that across the board, the zero ones, the light ones?
So these light ones have been around for quite a long time now, and there are some people that are able to reduce their total kilojoule intake by substituting sugar with artificial sweeteners. But what the long-term studies are showing us is that people don't replace, let's say, Coke or Sprite with the diet version and then suddenly lose massive amounts of weight.
So then,
there's something more going on that these people don't seem to just maintain a lower weight. It also depends where the studies are done, how long they're done, that kind of thing. So sometimes we find that when it's sponsored by this food company that uses a lot of artificial sweeteners, and even the type of artificial sweeteners, because there are so many different artificial sweeteners that they all have different effects inside the body. My personal preference is to use water, and if you want something sweet, enjoy it occasionally, but don't use sugar every day and don't use artificial sweeteners every day. I'm sorry.
Okay, producer Cat, we got 1 minute. You got a question. What's up?
I just wanted to know what the relation to green tea and belly fat. Like, apparently green tea, you should be drinking 5 cups a day, and that helps with belly fat. Like, how does that work?
There are some studies that suggest there's not many things in the world that will help to reduce weight, but there are some supplements that contain green tea extract that have been shown to really help. But when we say help, we don't mean like, oh, wow, I'm going to lose 40 kilograms. We mean like a really, really slight benefit. And that's green tea extract. So you can get it from green tea itself, or you could get it from an extract. But really, healthy diet is what you're going to use to get most of it. Also, green tea contains a lot of antioxidants and a little bit of caffeine. So it's quite fun.
Yay.
Healthy for you. Yay, caffeine.
All right. That's Nat Matt there. It's at Nat Matt on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And of course, your website as well.
InformedAppetite.com.
Fantastic. There you go. And that there is the Informed Appetite. We were talking about drinking. We'll touch base again with Nat Matt for some more depressing news in about a month from now. Kelman on CliffCentral.com.